Home is where we come from. And when I went home last month, I did a great deal of visiting and listening to elderly relatives, all of them, as a matter of fact, in their mid-80s and 90s. I listened to the stories of their lives, because it seems, after that experience, that at that age, people really do enjoy reminiscing and telling their life stories, including the spiritual dimension, with very little prompting on my part. Now, during the summer months this year, I spent a good deal of time reading and studying books on the stages of growth and the stages of faith in the lives of people. And what I read corresponded exactly to what I heard in the words of my elderly relatives. As they told me their stories, the vast majority of them discovered the real meaning of God in prayer and faith only when a major crisis occurred in their lives, at whatever decade of their age it may have been. And I'm sure now that on my part, listening as intently as I did to them, there was an unconscious desire to listen to their life stories of faith, because they were the ones who handed that precious gift of faith unto me. They were the witnesses to the faith. Two things in life are not taught, they are caught: prayer and faith. We discover that through the lives of other people around us. And if I were to create a composite of their responses to the question as to how and when God did become real in their lives, it, I think, would sound something like this. They would say, at that time in my life, for the first time, I was really at my wit's end. I now faced a situation that was simply too much for me to handle. And then I went down into the depths where any kind of self-confidence became ludicrous. There, all of the techniques that I had habitually relied upon, marshaling my wits and my willpower, going after what I wanted, all of that failed completely. The harder I struggled, the worse I was. And up until now, I thought I was so strong. I found now that I was beaten, unable to cope any longer. Not only with the outward circumstances, but even with my very self. And in that experience, they would say, I finally learned the meaning of what God is and what religion is. And also, I learned how to pray. Not because in that way I rationalized about the meaning of prayer, but it simply meant that I desperately needed God and God's help. In that darkest hour of my life, I learned finally that God is really an immediate, available presence all of the time. That just as around our physical bodies, we draw energy from the physical universe, so around our spirits, there is a spiritual presence in whom we are always able to find sustaining strength. When I am weak, at the very end of my resources, when I am done for, when all self-confidence becomes ludicrous, then I discovered I was strong in the Lord. That was their story. It means that we learn from people who go through life and are very innocent as they approach God. We depend upon the living God, that spirit, that mystery, not only for our very life, but for meaning, day in and day out, for that life gift. We cannot hope to become whole persons on our own. Alone, we are not able to cope. Alone, our life situation is more than we can handle. Alone, we are so often simply at our wits' end. And then we learn how to acknowledge our inherent weakness. We need to pray, depend upon God, and trust. Without reservation, that we'll be able to accept what comes our way. Anyone among you who desires for greatness must always learn eventually how to serve the rest. Whoever wishes to rank first must learn to serve the needs of all. Now that is always the paradox of Christianity. And that's what the readings are about today. But what does all of this mean? There are different ways of paraphrasing it. To spare others, we do not spare ourselves. To rescue other people from indignity or injustice often means that we ourselves might have to run the risk of suffering indignity and injustice in our lives. To give other people a chance to live, like having children, we need to give up our own leisure and our own lives in family life. It is the parents who become great people eventually by serving the rest in the family. No real father will ever spare himself to keep the children from hunger or from an education. And no good mother will ever spare herself by neglecting to feed the children or not giving them an attractive, pleasant home. Nor will she spare herself the inconvenience and the labor of childbirth. To give others the gift of life. And then as time goes on, the elder sisters and brothers will eventually catch that same spirit from the mother and father. And they will begin to serve the younger children. That's not a law of life. Generally, life is selfish. But it is the law of love. That's why the gospel is always countercultural. We find our fulfillment, our wholeness, in service. Serving others allows us to become truly ourselves. The elder sisters and brothers, the parents, will show the spirit of prayer and faith by living out their faith, witnessing to it, praying with the children, praying and learning how to believe. That's caught. It's never taught or learned by heart. Is that it then? That serving, even sacrificial love, for the need of another, is the way to save our own life in the very process of losing our own life? Yes, that's the paradox of Christianity. The gospel is countercultural. Except that today's scripture runs even more deeply. The readings from Isaiah today, and the gospel, and the epistle, they all imply that suffering itself is a form of serving other people, and that somehow, in a mysterious way, it is true. Even when we do not know who the beneficiary of our suffering happens to be, even when there is no direct link, as there would be when a father would suffer for his family. Jesus today is spoken of as giving his life and serving, that Jesus became a ransom for many people. And then the prophet Isaiah says today that the suffering servant, which is all of us, is not just beaten down in life, but the suffering servant is really like yeast that is mixed in the dough. And because the suffering servant is like the yeast. It is the suffering servant then that raises up the dough. There is a mysterious hidden promise today in the words both of Isaiah the prophet and Jesus, that the pain and suffering of our lives need never be wasted, ever. It is the deepest form of prayer in helping other people. But how are they to be used? Do we really serve other people when we die with a painful illness? When we put up with an aggravating headache? I know that many people today are no longer satisfied with the simplistic answer, you offer it up. But before you dismiss that kind of old-fashioned way, remember that many, many heroic people felt that their suffering somehow was vicarious, done and beneficial for the lives of other people, a part of the redemption in which we share that began with Jesus, that we make up for what is lacking in the sufferings of Christ. In other words, it's not just an offering, but it is an offering for someone. Dorothy Day, that heroic person, a woman who gave her life for the poor and downtrodden, believes that she was able to absorb some of the pain and punishment meant for others. And that great man, who undoubtedly will be proclaimed a saint, he already is by public acclamation, Pope John the 23rd, who thought of the Vatican Council at the proper time, his story is poignant. In the very midst of his most important work, establishing the Second Vatican Council, the signs of his own personal fatal illness became evident. And so the timing, in our eyes, seemed to be all wrong. The council had just begun, and now he was about to die. But in his own words, from his own sickbed, he said, "This sickbed of mine has become an altar, and it claims a victim, himself." That is the Passover mystery. As we die to ourselves, new life is born. We should be honest with ourselves and admit that many people do not yet quite understand this approach to service. This particular meaning of giving, real meaning to the mystery and the meaning of suffering. And yet those are the words we heard in today's scripture. And when we are asked, how does it work, this transmutation of suffering into service in unrelated cases, perhaps the very best short answer is that we do not know. That it is indeed entering into the mystery. And the word for God that great theologian Karl Rahner gave is mystery. We enter into God who became flesh in Jesus. And that was his Passover mystery. We are part of the Passover mystery. We are united with him, as we are told today, as sisters and brothers. But his God and our God is mother and father to all of us. And that we use everything in our lives with a good heart, all of our pain and suffering and resignation and even dying, all of that is part of the redemptive act of Jesus, the liberating redemptive act of which we all share. We are all united with Jesus Christ by faith and in spirit, so closely that he calls us sisters and brothers and mother. And he says to us today, can you drink the cup that I shall drink? Or be baptized in the same bath of pain as I? He asks a great deal of us. But if we say yes to be joined with him in his great work of redemption, he tells us it's much better than ever to sit on the thrones of power.